Welcome film industry professionals, film buffs, and aspiring filmmakers. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast, presented by Paradoxical Films and brought to you by Cine Video Tech. I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi, and co-host, Miss Dana Della Camera. Join us on a journey behind the camera, and most importantly, beyond what we know about cinema and the craft of filmmaking. Sit down, grab your popcorn, drink your soda, and let's ride the cinema road together with Cinema Pathway. Welcome, film family from across the world. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast with your hosts, Michael Angelo Malachi and Miss Dana De La Camara, not Calamera, De La Camara.
Thank you, Michael. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with the Cinema Pathway family. So excited to be here today. This podcast is for people who make films and want to get connected to the creative community, discover up-and-coming talent, or learn tips from experienced pros. Every week, Cinema Pathway spotlights new and experienced creative talent doing exciting things that you don't want to miss.
Are you ready for your intro? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And as a professional photographer, videographer, and filmmaker with a bachelor's degree in studio arts from Florida State University, Joe Wesley finds beauty in anything he beholds, whether it be in editorials, fashion, weddings, events, and films. Joe's work has been featured in publications like Legacy Miami Magazine, The Sun Sentinel, and The Miami Herald. He has photographed many celebrities, including Gabrielle Union. She's so beautiful, I just have to say it. And her husband, which is a three-time NBA champion, Dwayne Wade. We also have Flo Rida, DJ Khaled, nine-time Grammy Award-winning nominee, Rick Ross. Hailing from the rich and historical culture of Haiti, his skills and prominent eye for capturing the best in humanity has garnered him an impressive resume, working as co-president with our previous guest, Mr. Diemus Demare of Ampu Productions. Through Ampu Productions, he created three seasons of the series, To Each His Own, available on Tubi and Amazon Prime. He also has commercial experience working with a multi-million dollar NBA shoe campaign in China called, is it Li-Ning?
Yeah, Li-Ning, that's the name of Dwayne Wade's shoe company.
In addition, working as a lead videographer of RER Consulting, working with the local government and positively impacting youth through the Teen Talk series, which has led him to his current documentary film about students at HBCUs and mental health. With a portfolio like that, everybody, Mr. Joe Wesley.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate that.
See you blushing, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get it.
Because you're Haitian and I love the country of Haiti. I mean, it's a Caribbean country. I'm also Cuban myself, so we're like Afro-Cuban brothers, honestly. I know that Haiti, although it's beautiful, it comes with its challenges.
Yes.
It has political instability, corruption, and gang violence. With your early years in filmmaking, how has this impacted your career and your voice as a filmmaker?
Thank you for that question. So, being the fact that I was born in Haiti, I definitely have a deep love and passion for Haiti. When we get news of Haiti, it doesn't necessarily represent the Haiti that I know. It doesn't represent the Haiti that I came from. And it's normally a Haiti that is only focused on corruption and only focused on, you know, the issues and the problems. The Haiti that I know is filled with beauty. It's filled with pride. It's filled with resilience. It's filled with culture, good food, music. Haiti, to me, is a beautiful country with beautiful people, with amazing people that you would find that travels all over the world, that experience the world, but also bring to you a sense of humility, a sense of pride, and a sense of justice, because I know my heritage. Right. A heritage of Haiti where, you know, we are the first to gain our independence, not given. It wasn't given. We took it. So with that understanding, I don't expect anybody to give me anything. I expect to take what is mine, what belongs to me, and to earn it. So that's the pride and the resilience that I have as a Haitian. Coming from Haiti, yes, it's who I am, and I'm definitely proud of that.
Even
and,
the shirt you're wearing, right?
Yes, well, thank you, Nikki. That's my lady, the queen. She got this shirt for me. She got some taste. So she got good taste.
We'll let her know. Check know,
that was a nice shout out.
Yeah. Good taste on clothing and good taste in me, of course.
So. Oh, yes, good taste in men.
And good taste as a filmmaker, Dana.
Yes.
I just wanted to, I know when we were preparing for this interview, you talked about why your family brought you to the States and how that impacted your relationship to your culture. So can you talk to us a little bit about that? I really found that whole portion fascinating.
Yes. Yeah, so my dad, Hervey Wesley, he was a pastor, a minister. He was first a priest in Haiti, and he's gone through a lot. You know, he spoke four different languages, Spanish, English, French, and Latin. Not only did he speak in those languages, he also wrote in those languages. He was an educator. So he was someone that actually went through a lot of issues with the Haitian government. He was beaten up, you know, with the Duvalier regime and arrested. You know, he decided to leave Haiti and bring his whole entire family to the States in order to escape the issues that he was facing in Haiti, because he wasn't somebody that aligned himself with the Duvalier regime. And that impacted him and impacted my life and the life of my family, because once he brought us here, we did not necessarily grow up so much into the Haitian culture, right? So, of course, we had Haitian people around us, but I grew up in an African-American church, right? So instead of growing up in a Haitian church, my dad became a preacher in an African-American church. So my brothers and I, we sang in the choir. We were ushers in the church. So that was the upbringing that I had. And my dad would, not only would he speak Creole to us, he would also speak English with us, you know. So he pretty much raised us into this American culture in order for us to really find ourselves and be able to flourish in American culture. Because of his experience, he had a negative experience with Haiti, and he did not go back to Haiti, and that kept my whole entire family from going back to Haiti. He passed away in 2007, and it was until 2012 when I finally went back for the first time since, I believe, 1985 when we came here. And going back, it was just, you know, everything that I thought about Haiti was different. You know, it was somewhat of a cultural shock, a revelation to see Haiti as a really beautiful country, you know. And I was there. This was the first time, actually, I started filming. I was a photographer, of course, but this was the first time where I decided, you know what, I'm going to film and document this whole experience with my family, because it was a family reunion on my mother's side.
That was your first film, right?
That was my first film.
Ever,
called This Is Haiti, right? Yeah, that was my first film, and it was a family reunion. And I remember one particular thing that happened in Haiti that really made me question what was really happening in Haiti was, there was some locals in Haiti who said to me, do not film me and go ahead and misrepresent me. He saw me with the camera and he was afraid that I was going to misrepresent him, you know, and he was very prideful. And that's what I noticed. Haitian people are a prideful people and are prideful of their heritage and history. They take pride in the fact that they did not only defeat the French, they also defeated the Spaniards, right, in order to gain their independence, which also helped America out with the Louisiana Purchase. And of course, most people don't know this, in the American Revolutionary War, Haiti fought in that war as well, because the French and America, they were allies. So the French sent soldiers from Haiti to America to fight in the war in Savannah, Georgia, which they won, which was a pivotal war in the American Revolutionary War, which helped America earn their independence.
So that's literally like what the stock you come from.
Yes.
How is that present in the films that you're working on today?
Well, honestly, it's not present in that, because I'm still discovering. Like I said, you know, although I came from Haiti, I was not, like, in my household, my dad played American gospel music and classical music. So Haitian music wasn't played that often in my household. I would get a taste of that with my friends when I was in their home, right? The only thing that was very, very Haitian in my household was the food, because my mama could throw down.
What did she make?
Oh, she made it all. She made everything. There was no cook better than my mom.
No, she made.
Shout out to mom.
Oh, yeah. And right now, you know, like I cook pretty much every day. All of my brothers cook. So we come from a household of cooking. My dad was actually the first who taught me how to cook, but then my mom helped me become a better cook. And she had her restaurant. I was 14, 15 years old cooking in her restaurant.
Wow.
So it was, you know, I'm proud of that heritage. I'm proud of that history.
Is it safe to say that, okay, I'm going to go a little deep with you.
Go ahead.
Since you definitely seem like a kind of deep person. Your perspective as a photographer has been shaped by your experiences as a child, right? Obviously, photography is probably one of your strong shoes because you're hired to do photography. You've worked with celebrities, you've worked with government countries. What is it about your style of photography that attracts them? And how have you used this, right? This skill to parlay a beautiful film career?
Wow. Okay. That's a good question. So, you know, my greatest influence came from my father, right? So as a child, he would take us to movies and whatnot. So my first passion wasn't photography. It was film. That was my first passion. And that's because of my dad. I still remember to this day when I was a child in Haiti, in the movie theaters, watching a movie with my dad and my brothers. And my dad, he loved the cinema. So likewise, I became a lover of the cinema as well. And I kind of accidentally fell into photography. I discovered photography in college at FSU. That's when I first discovered it. But before that, I really wanted to get into film. And I tried to get into FSU film program.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't let me.
Aww.
I'm sorry, FSU. Like, you know, we okay. I graduated from you, but I don't give them
everything
a
happens for a reason. It's okay.
I don't give them a shout out.
But you know what? That kind of, even though they didn't accept you, that kind of rejection gave you the fuel for your beautiful photography career. So if you weren't rejected from there, you wouldn't have found what you're really prolific at, which is photography.
Yes. And when I started, actually, I fell in love with being in a dark room because I did not pick up photography from a digital perspective. I picked up photography from film. So I was developing film. I was in a dark room, you know, developing rolls of film. That's one. And then taking a light sensitive paper, developing that. And when 50 Cent Get Rich or Die Tryin' album came out, I jammed to that album maybe like 5-6 times in a row all night. I was in that dark room just printing.
Zone.
I was in my zone. I was there. And that's when I realized I love this because time passed by and I didn't notice the time passing by. I was just enjoying that process of creating. With my dad, I remember the first time that he actually appreciated something that I did, right? And I was in elementary school at Biscayne Garden Elementary School. I think I was in the fifth grade. There was a drawing that I did that was submitted in the Miami Youth Fair. The students used to have their art submitted there. And my dad was actually proud of my artwork, right? And that you know, and I was, and I felt good about that, you know? So art has been always a part of me, right? Art is a part of Haitian culture to begin with. I mean, just, we love the arts. It's
film
just,
and art is part of everyone's culture.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I love all of the arts. So when I discovered photography, I was first a communication major. I immediately changed my major to studio art, in which I studied from drawing to painting, and it helped me with my photography. You know, so as far as like my influence really came from what I experienced in America, because at that age, I did not know Haiti as well. The only understanding of Haiti was the friends around me. And yes, that's where I'm from, but I wasn't immersed into the Haitian culture.
I think it's really interesting that this, I can see how your search and your research into your culture and the history in general led you into being a great, led you into being a documentarian, you know, going that route and getting involved. Like, as you're talking, I'm like, there's no coincidence that you were involved in the documentaries. There's no coincidence that you were at that Million Man March and, you know, some of the other documentaries that you have coming up that we're going to talk about later. So with that, we're going to take a short break.
Awesome.
So as always, if you enjoyed or just want to express anything you feel about this podcast, remember to subscribe to the Cinema Pathway podcast on your favorite podcast platform. We will return in just a moment more with Joe Wesley and his experience with some exciting documentaries. You don't want to miss it. We'll see you in a minute.
Welcome to Tell Your Story. It is a masterclass hands-on workshop that is presented by Cine Video Tech
and brought to you by Paradoxical Films.
Tell Your Story brings various trainings of master workshops involving a hands-on, personal, and virtual experiences. The courses are focused on the craft of filmmaking. Amongst the various film departments coming this fall, crafting cinematic vision and lighting engineers with the instructor, Mr. Egon Stefan Jr. You will learn how to work with actual film, 16mm, super 16mm, 35mm, and film cameras. In addition, how to load them and change magazines. Furthermore, the workshop will prepare you on how and what it takes to work on set as a first or second assistant camera, the fundamentals of lighting, and the pathway to become a director of photography. Furthermore, coming soon for the spring of next year is Unveiling the Artistry, Mastering Makeup Techniques with the uber-talented special effects makeup artist, Bianca Graziani. She will enrich your knowledge, make you look good, and techniques with professional tools that are implemented in the film industry, commercials, and much more. For information about the classes and updates, everything will be posted on our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/tell-your-story.
Welcome back to Cinema Pathway. I'm your host, Dana Della Camera, along with
Michelangelo Malika.
And our special guest,
Joe Wesley.
So let's dive into filmmaking and photography. Just to set the tone, I'm going to give a little introduction. So the invention of the digital camera completely revolutionized the photography industry and changed the way that photographers work. For many, because of the concepts of instant gratification and the ability to shoot thousands of frames during one single event in the hopes that, you know, you can capture those few great images, the fine art of craftsmanship of photography has, some might say, been lost, you know, just because there's a craft to the actual physical side of developing, as you mentioned, hours in the dark room versus 100 photos on your,
yes,
perhaps.
Yes.
However, thanks to the industry leaders like Jose Vila and Elizabeth Messina, the art of film photography has had a huge resurgence over the past decade, with many of the world's best photographers opting out of digital photography and instead choosing the timeless craft of film. So in your expert opinion, what is the major difference in film photography versus digital photography? What do you prefer? Or are there certain situations you think are better for both? What are your thoughts on that?
I think if you are a film photographer, then you have what it takes to actually be a photographer, right? Because it requires patience. It requires you truly learning how to understand your camera, but how to properly expose your work. You learn to utilize all types of tools in order to perfect, you know, properly exposing your shots, you know, such as light meters, right? Most digital photographers don't use light meters. If you work with film, you have to use a light meter. You want to know and make sure your aperture is correct. You want to use the proper shutter speed, but you want to know why you're using that shutter speed, why you're using the aperture, right? So what I found is that learning photography from a digital perspective, some of that art is lost because digital photographers don't know what it's like to actually take film and go into a place in complete darkness and take your roll of film, put it in a canister and know which chemicals to utilize and how much of that chemical you should utilize and mixing it in order to properly develop your film. Right. And then the process after that, right, you want to take that same film and then go into a dark room and exposing that film into a light sensitive paper. A lot of photographers don't know that process. And it's a tedious process, a process that takes time, but a process that if you're willing to go through that, then you would find that you truly have a love for the art of photography, you know, because photography is manipulating light, is capturing light. It is understanding how to utilize your tool and not just take a picture or a moment of time, but to be an artist with that. Utilizing film helps you to be not just a photographer, but an artist that utilizes photography as your form of art. And digital photographers, you learn how to be a editor, you know, and that's just my perspective, where I find a lot of digital photographers where you look at their original raw image, and a lot of them would not share their raw images with people because they have to edit.
And in film, you really don't.
With film, you have no choice. You take that shot, you have to send it over. With digital, you get an opportunity to edit your work, where now, of course, with the advances of digital photography, there's so much detail that you can capture in digital photography, where you can change your highlights in post. You can change your shadows in post. You can change your white balance in post, right? With film, no, you had to do that right then and there. You know, you learn to discipline yourself to be able to do all of the necessary steps to make sure that once you snap that camera, you're taking that right image.
And we all know that light is so important when it comes to photography.
Oh, yes,
light can either make someone or make the product look amazing, or it can literally destroy it. And we literally know people, right, on your phone where the lighting was terrible. You can't see their faces. There's no expression. And photograph is essentially unusable. Now, I know that you've worked on campaigns and weddings, which are two totally different things.
Yes.
One is someone's special day that they'll capture, they'll have for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. So they want you to make sure that you're meticulous in your work. Mm-hmm. You take as much time as you possibly can, because this is something that is precious to who they are and possibly their future. Mm-hmm. Versus, for example, the Ling-Ning campaign, right, for shoes. What is the difference in style that you use between doing a high fashion digital campaign for example, a shoe company, versus a timeless moment in a wedding? What are the styles and your differences, and which one do you prefer?
I don't know if I prefer any one or the other.
Okay.
Okay, let's say this, right? For one, as a shooting weddings, I only shoot weddings of people that I'm cool with. I mean,
someone you have a connection with.
Someone I have a connection with, because I don't have the patience for a bridezilla, right? I don't have to, because...
And that's honest, though.
Yeah,
that's honest.
I recently I shot two weddings, and these are people that I know. And one of the weddings, right, there was somebody in that wedding that was bugging me to go ahead and take their photos. And I said, look, I'm about to go eat right now. No, come on, take the photo. I said, I'm going to eat right now. And the bride came and said, hey, the photographer's going to eat, right? That's why I take photos for people that I know. Because if I don't know you like that, then I may have to deal with so many different types of personalities, because you're dealing with people, right? I was there to make sure that the bride got everything that she wanted, right? Because I'm very comfortable with her. She's comfortable with me. So I wanted to make sure that she's happy with my work. So she's going to get that. But then again, sometimes you're dealing with other people that may get on your nerves, and we're only humans, right? And sometimes you just have to deal with it. And for the most part, shooting weddings, it can be very, very stressful. It can be.
What makes it so stressful?
The people. Dealing with all types of different personalities that don't have the patience, right? And you're being pulled here and there. You know, when you want to eat and relax, you don't have the time to eat and relax. Some say, hey, go do this, go do that. For me, I'm like, okay, well, I've shot enough of these. I don't need to take this shot right now. Let me eat. Let me make sure I'm good. And you'll find many wedding photographers that would say, they don't even feed us. They don't. So there are a lot of wedding photography horror stories out there. And personally, I don't like shooting it. But now, when it comes to shooting a campaign,
what is the style difference between them two?
Well, the style difference is, one, wedding, there's a lot of different types of photos that you have to take. But you're also the artist, which you can utilize your own personal style and make it, you know, amazing, right? Based on how you shoot.
What would you say is your personal style?
My personal style? Wow, that is, you know, my personal style, I would say, is very colorful. I love colorful images. I love contrasting images. Images that really blends well together.
Like they jump out at you.
They jump out. Yes, yes.
Okay, so you're not a minimalist. You're really more of an extrovert when it comes to photography.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay. So my style is, you know, it's my style. And I didn't realize my style until years after being a photographer, and I'm looking at all of my images. I'm like, oh, this is my style. Because I was just doing what I felt right.
Like your shirt.
Yes.
Like that's my shirt. Your style.
It felt right.
And beautiful. And
yes.
It's beautiful.
Yes. And but like I was saying, like shooting a campaign, there's a difference because I get to be very meticulous. I get to be artistic. It's not about, okay, I have to take these particular shots, because with a wedding, you have to shoot the dress. There's like so many photos that you have to take with shooting like shoes or shooting, you know, different types of portraits. I get to just do me and light it the way that I want to light it, you know, utilize shadows in the way that I want to utilize shadows, utilize color, you know, utilize gels, utilize so many different, you know, aspects of photography to really make this image stand out, you know. So I get to be an artist. I get to be creative. I get to really express myself as a photographer, where some other stuff you don't get to, you just here to capture the moment, not be so much expressive. But, you know, I would try my best to be expressive in capturing the moment by the composition, by what's in focus or what's not in focus, by the focal point, by how whatever's within that frame, right? What's in the background of that frame, right? So I think about everything within that frame to be a part of that image. So if there's something that is distracting within an image, I try to make it not distracting, to make it a part of that image, to actually bring out that image. So, you know, as a photographer, you know, there's certain rules that you learn about, rule of thirds, right? Leading lines and that sort of stuff. So you learn to really utilize everything within your frame to bring out that focal point, to bring out the image or that person, you know, and not just those leading lines and where your focal point is in that frame, but also the shadows, utilizing shadow, utilizing light, you know, utilizing, you know, all of these different aspects, you know, you also utilizing color. So photography, it's all of that combined, and you're painting, right? It's a form of painting with light, with color, with composition, with lines, with texture. All of that is involved in creating a beautiful image.
With the technology advancing so rapidly, I mean, how are you staying up to date, and how do you see the industry changing?
The industry is always evolving. And like right now we have AI, where you can literally take a photo of yours and just have AI touch it up for your headshot work, right? So people try to take shortcuts. Even though it is advancing in that way, I take pride in the artists and the photographers that can truly take any advance and make it their own, and rebranding it, refashion it to be their own creative way of expression. It can be to your advantage. You can allow it, be afraid of that, or you can utilize it as a tool. Everything is just a tool, you know.
Every photographer and every cinematographer that I've ever interviewed, they have their baby, like their favorite camera to use. Mm-hmm. Which one is your favorite? You would like similar to a car, right? This is the one I take with me everywhere because I know it's going to get the job done right. And what are the aspects of that camera that others can use?
Wow. Okay. So I have, like, I'm a Canon shooter, and it's not to advertise Canon.
And we're shot on Canons today. So good job, Canon.
It's not to advertise on Canon because, you know, some people, they have whatever camera that they like. At the end of the day, right, nobody asks the painter what type of paintbrush you use. Nobody asks the painter what type of brand of paint you use. You know, it's just a tool. So to me, the camera is just a tool. So I don't necessarily have a favorite camera to say that's my baby, right? However, I will say that my first actual camera, right, the camera that I've learned is my baby, because it's the start of me being a photographer.
Which was?
Which was a twin lens reflex camera, right?
A twin lens reflex camera.
Yes, yes. It's one of those square cameras that you look down into. It has two lenses on there, one so you can see and one to capture the image.
I bet it had excellent tonal quality and resolution. God. It must have.
Well, it had to use film, and the film dictated that. However, the camera itself, it did everything, as far as it had, you know, an aperture of a 2.8 all the way to 22, and shutter speed all the way up to about 5,000, right? So, you know, as long as you have basic shutter speed that you need, basic apertures that you need, right, then you put the film in there. The film, of course, any film from ISO 50 all the way to ISO 6400. So you the artist, you figure it out, right? Like, so yes. I utilize that camera was the foundation for me learning photography. photography, and it was a medium format camera. So the images would come out like in a square format, right? 6x6 centimeters. And that's what I would utilize to go in a dark room and print out. So that was my first camera, my baby. That's what I consider my baby. Everything else, right? They're replaceable.
You must be used as like a lead cinematographer for Anpu Productions, because I mean, since photography is your baby, that's what your bread and butter. Yes. You speak so highly about it. Is that the reason why you think Damus DeMeritt, like he hired you, because he saw that you had such a unique and creative eye that is so meticulous, that is so necessary in films today? I think a lot of films are very rushed because of money, because of time, but I don't think many people take as much time with the cinematography part as you do.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I'm a photographer by trade, right? I'm a photographer first. With cinematography, you're still a photographer. It's still the same concept, right? Instead of catching stills, you're capturing motion. So it's the same process. Yeah. Just now the difference is motion. So instead of like, you know, you may use flash photography where now you're using a lot more lighting to sort of like replicate the same thing. But not just that now, right? Because with cinematography, you want to, let's say, create a scenery that looks natural on film, right? So what your eye may see, the camera may not be able to capture that, right? So this is where good quality cameras come into place. Cameras that
like the Canon.
Right. So yeah, that's where good quality camera comes into place, where it can capture a lot of details in the shadow without overblown highlights. When your eye is the best camera there is, period, because you can see details in shadow and the details in the highlights at the same time. So you want to be able to emulate that with your photography, with your cinematography, which may comes into bringing in a lot of lighting and understanding the capabilities and the strengths and weaknesses of your camera in order to create that. So you must be passionate about photography.
How easy or difficult was it for you to go from photographer to filmmaker?
Okay, so there were many difficulties, right? Because there's a process in filming. As a photographer, it's mainly me, and I'm telling everybody what to do, right? As far as like my assistants, okay, I need this light, I need a light here, I need this type of reflector on there. But when it comes to a filmmaker, right, now you're working with a director, now you work with actors, now everything is in motion. So you want to figure out, okay, how do you keep this consistent? The basics as far as photography is concerned is already there, right? But now, do you keep the camera, keep rolling, or do you cut after every... And when I started, I made a lot of errors. So instead of just keep rolling from time to time, I would cut really quickly, and before you know it, we have so many footage and you have to go through so many of them, when it was like I could have just kept the camera rolling and we just reshoot on that same roll. It was a lot to learn, but also a lot to learn with a crew, with others.
Oh, with Ampu Production.
With Ampu Production, yes.
And with that, guys, do you guys hear that passion in this man's voice? I think that's a very rare thing, that someone takes their work so seriously that it's not only their work, it's the part of their life. Take note, guys, this is what passion is embodied. Really, I love it. Just like your shirt, very bold and very beautiful, or handsome with your gut.
I'll take beautiful because I'm that too.
Okay.
Wow,
okay.
Handsome and beautiful.
Okay.
And with that.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll see you in a little bit.
We would like to take a moment to thank our partners who help make this podcast possible. Cine Video Tech has been providing film equipment, training, and services to the film industry both inside and outside the U.S. since 1968. ComTV offers consulting and production services for a wide range of entertainment, marketing, advertising, and commercial projects, and much more.
Welcome back, film family, to Cinema Pathway Podcast with Michelangelo Malachi and Miss Dana.
De la camera.
De la camera. Anyway, we're here with Mr. Joe Wesley. Guys, I'll be honest with you. I literally feel like I'm in class right now. I had no idea that he had so much knowledge. I mean, we're talking about frame rates. We're talking about shadows and lights. I'm like, I'm just an actor. I don't know about that stuff. But it's beautiful that you do. And that's the reason why you've been hired and will continue to be hired. And that's how you became co-president of Anpu Productions. Now, mentorship. We all know that it's an important part of this industry. You have mentioned that you've been lucky to have mentors that have opened doors that have helped take your career to the next level, right?
Yes.
Your future or your past mentorships and opportunities that have brought you into this film world. There's two people that come to mind, Mr. Jeffrey Salter and Mr. Bob Tellis.
Okay, so before I had an actual mentor, I had people that I actually loved their work, right? My favorite photographer pretty much of all time is David LaChapelle. I love his work as a photographer. I mean, if you look at some of the works that he have done where he would, you know, that famous photo of Tupac in a bathtub with the jury. I don't know if you remember that he's in a bathtub like this with the jury on it. That's David LaChapelle. And he shot so many different, you know, celebrities back in the days. And he also became a filmmaker and music video director. So I love his work as a photographer because he used a lot of color in his shots, and I just love his perspective. So I used to look at his work and try to emulate that. And it wasn't until when I think this was back in 2007, 2008, where I came across this gentleman known as Jeffrey Salter, right? Jeffrey with a J, Salter as in salt. He's pretty much a world-renowned photographer. He's currently a Sports Illustrated main cover photographer. Mm-hmm. I worked as his assistant for like a few years. And in that time, working with him as his assistant, that's when I truly learned of how to light my subject. Before him, I was just trying to figure it out based on what I was seeing. This was, you know, before we can go on YouTube University and learn some stuff, right? So I used to look at photos and, okay, I'm seeing this light hitting him in the back. Like, what type of modifiers was being utilized in order to get that light that way? But work with Jeffrey Salter, he utilized so many different techniques to
he was like the light master.
Oh man, he's a master of photography, right? So when I first started with him, it was him and maybe a few other assistants, because he did major shoots, big shoots. This is when I was first started working with so many different celebrities, movie stars, actors, actresses, athletes. Like, you name the athlete, like he shot them all. Name your top favorite athlete. I guarantee you he shot them.
Ken Griffey Jr.
He shot them.
Get out. What?
He shot them all. He shot them all. LeBron James, Serena Williams, top tennis players he shot. All of the top athletes in the world, he pretty much have shot. And it's not just athletes. Like, he pretty much have shots for so many major publications. And I went with him to shoot with him, and we traveled all over the country to shoot. That's when I was learning. That's when I got to see how he liked his subjects. I was seeing how his assistants, which understood him, and they knew exactly what he wanted. And I was learning from his assistant, also learning from him. I was also, you know, when he put his camera down, I was pick his camera up, look at his settings, right? So I would learn all of that.
Well, what were his settings? Can I write it down?
Unless they're secret. It
changes. Your settings always change, right? Meaning, when I say your settings, like your ISO, right? Your aperture, your shutter speed, it varies based on the shot. So I used to look at all of that, the type of cameras that he was utilizing. What type of lenses he was utilizing. Okay, why he chose to use a 50 and then he switched to a 35 and then he switched to an 85.
So do your settings change, like with film work, right? Do they change per scene? Like, this is, say, you shoot outside or you shoot a night scene or a day scene. Do your settings change per scene, or is it best to keep it at one particular setting that is fits the mood of the work?
Well, it depends. It may change. It may change just a little. Like, let's say you're outdoors and it's extremely bright. Of course, you may want to add an ND filter. But yeah, it may change in terms of your aperture, right? Because the aperture is what may change the most. But of course, you want to make sure that...
For our audience, what is aperture?
Aperture is the iris on your lens. So it pretty much determines the size of your iris, which allows the amount of light to come in. It also determines the focal length of your shot as well.
You essentially know the basics of film because you have a degree in it. So what would you say is the main difference in learning, you know, for mentoring with Jeffrey Salter versus like the education you get in school or that you got in school?
In school, the teacher has the direction for you. The teacher is teaching you all of the basic fundamentals.
A book, a formula.
Yeah, you know, the teacher is doing all of that stuff, showing you the basics of a camp. But now working with a professional, it's different. Where, okay, now we're on a professional scene. So it's taking what you've learned and applying it. So now it's application of what you have already learned. So like with Jeffrey, wasn't like an intentional mentor. It's not like he came and said, I'm going to mentor you. And I said, hey, I need a mentor. It was never that. But he happened to be a mentor because he knew 100 times more than what I knew. He's already a pro in that field, in that industry. And I respected that. And I took the opportunity to actually learn from him and learn his techniques and how he did things and how he solved problems, right, when he was dealing with that. So that's what it was for me. So he became a mentor to me, which helped me to improve my craft, you know. And I end up becoming mentors to others, where I've helped others to learn something about photography. Like with Bob Metellus, which is Dwayne Wade's main personal photographer, he put together a whole crew of photographers where we would learn from each other. So he would learn from me, I would learn from him, and we would learn from other photographers on how to improve our craft.
You know, this is perfect segue, because we were just talking to a colleague or someone who's entering like internship to be part of our production assistants, you know, assistant. And I told him, life is a class. Don't get me wrong. School is the foundation and is incredibly important. Finish your degree. But on set experience can be much more valuable than what most people learn in school. Yeah. So with that, I ask you, what did you learn with working with these amazing cinematographers, photographers that you didn't learn in school?
Well, you learn mostly how to deal with personalities, how to deal with people, because this is business. This is work. There's money involved.
So you had to deal with Gabrielle. You had to deal with Dwayne Wade. Yeah. What was it like dealing with them?
Well, they're people. They're human beings.
Lovely people.
Like for me personally, when it comes to what are celebrities and whatnot, I just see them as another human being that are very talented at what they do, that allow them the recognition that they have, which have garnered so many followers and people that, you know, observe them. But at the end of the day, you know, they're no different. They're no better or worse than you and I. So they are people. So basically, you know, you learn to first and foremost respect yourself, respect your craft, respect what you're doing, have a passion for, and respect those around you. And having that mutual respect of yourself and others around you, then you put forth your best effort to make sure that the environment that you're in, that you are there to be a bright piece of that environment, to help that environment to achieve a common goal, right? And not take away from that, right? So, which I think is important to really get to know yourself, right? Get to know the things that are good and bad and the things about yourself. And we all have our little issues here and there that may be disruptive to others. Get to know that so it's not an issue for someone else, right? So you want to be able to be in a peaceful environment. So working with other people, it's good to be able to have the knowledge now, right? Now, are you capable of taking advice? Are you capable of taking directions? You may know a little bit more than the person that has given you direction. That doesn't mean you should not take directions.
So are you able to be
humble enough to really take that from others?
Are you teachable?
Are you teachable? Exactly.
Well, I think it's two ways. I think it's also being hungry to learn and develop. And I think that, you know, as I've been listening to hear you share, it's like, you know, a bunch of photographers or filmmakers like coming together to share, to learn from each other. And I think it's like that hunger is so important to keep learning and keep your mind open, not think like, oh, well, I've learned everything, or I'm done, or I've got this. It's like there's always an opportunity. So in that regard, what would you say were the two most important lessons that you learned from each of your mentors?
Is to be present, to be in that moment.
Be present.
Because there's so much that could be going on that, like, for instance, I could be an assistant to the person that is shooting. They may not see or notice everything. I love it when I'm shooting, like, for instance, if I'm a photographer and I'm shooting a model and there's a stylist here, makeup artist there, I may be focused on the lighting, the composition, all of that stuff. I may miss on a few things, such as, okay, the button is unbuttoned, right? The stylist being attentive and being there to make sure that everything is perfect. I need that, right? The makeup artist to know, oh, there's a little sweat here. Let me go correct that. I need that because I may not notice it at the moment.
So attention to detail.
Attention to detail, absolutely. So you want to just be present and be there to see what they may not be able to see.
and at the same time absorb this information, absorb this knowledge, just be there, not just absorb the information, but be in tune with everyone that is there, be in tune with the emotions, be in tune with the energy that is in the room.
So how is being present and your attention to detail? Message, guys, that is so important. I mean, not just for photographers, but for everyone in life, right? When you go for a job, are you present? Do you want this? Are you qualified beyond what they're asking for? And two, do you pay attention to the little details that maybe 40 other people didn't? Because that may be your breakthrough. That may be the reason why that director or that photographer or that producer or that boss takes your resume and says, yes, because this person took the time and the passion to take attention to the detail, and because they want this, they're present. Mm-hmm. How has that garnered your position as co-president at Ampu Productions?
Well, okay, I think one of the most important things, right? One, you want to have the skills, right? You want to be able to have that, right? But being in tune and being present, it allows you to be more aware of what is happening in your environment. It gives you a better situational awareness, right? To be able to read the room and know what is happening others and paying attention to that. So sometimes people are in their heads, right? You can tell this person, he may be here to work, but their mind is somewhere else. Are they really paying attention here? But when you're present, when you are in tune, when you have that awareness of what's going on in your environment, then you would do what is necessary, not wait and ask. No, you would do what is necessary. So sometimes it may require you to just make the initiative and just taking action on what is necessary.
Yeah, I think it's really about adding value. And if somebody feels like you've got their back, I think that is really what the thing is, because a lot of people like to kind of run in packs, like a crowd of people, like a team. That no, not in a bad way though. Just in, you know, if you're, you know, there's a lot of money on the line with some of the shoots that you're working on or some of the projects. So you want to make sure that your team's got your back and that they're looking out for the
absolutely.
Things that you might miss, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
But with that, I want us to just briefly talk about your experience working with. You've worked with lots of rappers, musicians, those kinds of folks. So what was that like working with like the Flo Riders and Rick Ross and DJ Khaled's of the world?
It was just another day at a job for me personally, right? So I see them as people. Okay, look, work with Jeffrey Salter. I was in the same room with Barack Obama before he became president. This was in 2008 when he was running for president.
Oh, wow.
So I got that opportunity, right? So I've got the opportunity to be in the same room with Michelle Obama. So I've got the opportunity to be in a room with some of the most famous people on earth. I'm sure if they pass gas, it stinks.
Well, I mean, I understand but also I'm imagining it might be more creative just because in music, but I don't know. That's
to me personally, I give them the respect that they deserve the same way I'm going to give the least person the respect that they deserve. So I am yes, ma'am, yes, sir to them as I am yes, ma'am, yes, sir to a child. That's what's important, is seeing that person, not putting them above anybody else, but really seeing that person, acknowledging that person, regardless of their stature in life, but actually being genuine when you see them. And everybody wants to be seen. Yeah. Right. So
everyone
see them and acknowledge them. Right. No matter where they're at in life, and not treat them any better because of what they have accomplished. So for me, that's where it's at.
So, Joe, I mean, piggybacking on that theme of being seen. Right. I also know there's the opposite. Mm-hmm. Being censored.
Yes.
We all know that, especially we live in cancel culture, and you can't say certain things, and you can't bring up, you can't shoot certain things because you get censored. By the big wigs, right?
Yeah.
I know that you had a trip to China, and I know that they're really strict about censorship there. You can't do this. Did you run into any censorship problems there, or any censorship in your work in general as a filmmaker?
I've never ran into any censorship at all with...
Wow.
No, not because...
You're lucky. You're blessed.
Maybe.
So you were always free to be you, basically.
When you respect the environment that you're in, when you have respect for it, it's like if I come to your home, right, you have your rules, I will respect you in your home. So why would I ever be censored unless I'm violating your rules?
Wow.
In your home. So if you want to be acknowledged in a certain way, I will acknowledge you in that way. I don't have to agree with you. However, I will respect you with what you require. And if I do that, then why should I even be censored. So it's not about me. I don't make it about myself, about having to be right. I may just absolutely be right. How important is needing to be right, when the true importance is relationships, is being able to accept one another, regardless if you agree or disagree with them.
And how right is this man coming to this podcast today? Seriously, the wealth of knowledge that you've poured upon us came from your heart, and we thank you for that. Are you ready for segment four?
Oh, I'm
need
ready.
A breather.
Let's bring it
I
in.
Know we've had a lot of tough stuff, but you ready?
I'm good, man. I can do this all day.
Hey, maybe part two, right? And with that, when we return and jump into our last segment, mm-hmm. we want to hear your thoughts about
your thoughts.
What is in the future for Joe's Wesley. Keep it in there. Keep it in there. We'll see you in just about like a minute. Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Dear audience, we have a great announcement to make. Okay. From August 5th, 2024, you will be able to enjoy our show visually on our brand new YouTube channel called Paradoxical Films. And as you already know, the show's name is Cinema Pathway, with our host, Michael Angelo Melica, and co-host, Miss Dana Della Camera. So please, guys, subscribe, click, like, and follow us on all of your favorite digital platforms. The episode will come live once a month. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, and we hope that you do, we hope, right? Support us by subscribing to your favorite podcast platform and giving us a rating. Then head to our online store at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop, where you can purchase Cinema Pathway gear, including t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Also, don't forget, follow us on Instagram at cinema_pathway_podcast. Again, that's cinema_pathway_podcast for all the behind-the-scenes photos and more.
Welcome back, film family, to our final segment with Mr. Joe Wesley. So we're kind of going to take it back and wrap around in a circle and go back to kind of some of the first things we were talking about, which is featuring some of the wonderful work that Joe has been involved in regards to documentaries. So you've been involved in quite a few documentaries, including HBCU Homecoming Journey to the Yard, HBCU Honors and Awards Ceremony, and Miami's Richmond Heights, The Black Shangri-La, which are films you can find on LG, Sony Crackle, and Plex TV. So tell us, Joe, how did you get involved in these projects? And tell us a little bit about each one.
So it started off, the director and producer of these projects is Jessica Modkins. She has a production company called Hip Rock Star. And I've known her for quite some time because I think about 5 or 6 years back, she was being honored as a woman of substance, in which I did a photo shoot it was a photo showcase of women, important women in South Florida. And she was one of the women of substance that I shot. And we had a gallery showcase at the government building right down First Street in Miami. It was submitted for the entire month of February, the Black History Month. So that was an opportunity in which my work was being displayed. And that's when I met her. You know, she's doing her thing as also a filmmaker and producer. I reached out to her about working with her. I ended up shooting her and her husband for Legacy MIA Power Couples, because her husband, Roy Modkins, he's worked in the television industry for some time, even worked with Byron Allen. So he's pretty much
heavy hitters.
Good gentleman. Basically, they decided, you know what? They decided, okay, we're going to work with Joe. And they asked me about my availability, about my rates and all of that stuff. And then before you know it, I was working on the Black Shangri-La, right? That was the first project in which they hired me for, where I was an additional cameraman to that project. I came in that project, not in the beginning of it, but somewhat in the middle of it. Ever since then, you know, we had chemistry and working together. When I came there, of course, you know, back to what we was talking about, just being present and making sure that you see things that no one else sees. And we just had a great relationship, and she continued to hire me.
Really quick, can you talk just briefly, a short summary of what the Black Shangri-La was?
It's a story about Richmond Heights, about the first community of African-Americans that fought in World War II. They was capable of purchasing homes in that community. And that was the first time you had former World War II veterans able to purchase homes in South Miami.
And literally over 1 million guys of Black people fought in that war.
Yes.
1 million people fought in that that war.
Yes, and black home ownership wasn't a thing, you know, unless you were in segregated communities. And this community was a thriving community of black professionals, in which so many people came out of that communities. And we pretty much interviewed quite a few people that are pretty much doing amazing work in the community, where they're pilots. One guy, he's an engineer for NASA. It was mainly about that community and what came from that, the people that came from that community. So it was an untold story of Black South Miami, and just highlighting that particular story. So it was, you know, a blessing to definitely be a part of that, to help Jessica and Roy to capture that story, to tell that story. And she's also a member of that community as well. She came from that community.
You know, first of all, my hat goes off to anyone who's a veteran in this country.
Yes.
I think what you give up, your rights that you give up for us sitting here now, bravo. I know you don't get your flowers. I'm giving you flowers right now. You deserve a lot more, better treatment than you're getting. But one thing that the veteran community deals with is mental health. And that's something that, as we were talking in the break, mental health has not been a popular subject until after the pandemic. All of a sudden, people were worried about, how is your frame of mind working today? How does it affect your job? How does it affect your feelings? How does it affect you paying your bills? Basically functioning as a human being in today's society. Yeah. And it's interesting because now you're working on a double feature film focusing on HBCU students and mental health. Tell us about this project and how it came about and who's involved in it.
Basically, I've been working with Ruben Roberts. He is the former president of the NAACP, and he has a company, RER Consultants, in which we focus on mental health. We also focus with teenagers. There's a program called Teen Talks, in which we work with teenagers and police officers, bridging the gap between the youth and police officers, because many of these teenagers, because of seeing so much, not trusting the police officers, and they got an opportunity to see that these people are just like them. You know, they grew up in the same communities, have the same type of experiences. So to sort of like give them a different perspective of police officers and the work that they do, you know, we've been able to take them to the 911 call center. We've taken them to the police training facilities. We've pretty much taken them to many field trips, the Miami Aquarium, the Miami Zoo, Vizcaya Museum. And, you know, we've opened their eyes to seeing and understanding how policing is done and the importance of policing, and also help the police officers to actually see the youth as human being, you know, just recently.
And not the enemy.
Just recently, you know, a young airman was just shot by the police officer. As soon as he walked in, you know, he was gunned down by the police officer. So these are situations in which we deal with all the time. The way in which the HBCU documentary came into place is that we were featuring another young filmmaker and his documentary film, which already dealt with just mental health. And we decided to go into Edward Waters University, which is HBCU at Jacksonville, Florida, Duval County. Shout out to Duval. And they had a school shooting there that heavily impacted the students there. And we decided, you know what, let's go over there. Let's have a talk to these students. Let's see what they're going through. And it was at that moment that we decided that Ruben and I decided that, you know what, let's focus on telling this story. Let's focus on the story of mental health with young black youth, why they chose HBCU and opposed to PWI, predominantly white institution, if you don't know what PWI stands for. Why, and what's the importance of having people that looks like you to be your educators? Why is it important to have somebody that understand your culture and able to understand you and know what you're coming from, because they're of the same culture?
Identification.
Identification, how they can actually help you with your education, you know? So for me, I thought that this is an opportunity to really hone into that story, because I wish that there was mental health. Back when I was in college, I wish that there was some emphasis on mental health, right? It wasn't there, because we all go through stuff. We all go through struggles. Everyone do, right? But nobody thought about it as a mental health crisis or mental health issues.
And this is what this film basically, or documentary, focuses on.
Yeah, it's focused on that, but it's also focused on how going into a HBCU, especially because you're leaving high school, you want to improve yourself and get a higher education, how going to an HBCU might actually be what is best for you, because the educators, your teachers, they will have a greater understanding of who you are as an individual, understanding your culture and how to properly educate you.
I just was going to say, I think it's really, I think, important work that you're doing. I think it's important, especially for children, to have some type of sounding board and provide a different point of view, because the news propounds so many things. And I think as filmmakers, independent filmmakers, I think that is an opportunity for us to expose them to other ways of thinking. Or, you know, like you said, it's just, I'm a firm believer of going straight to the horse's mouth.
Yes, of course.
Say it.
That you're going straight to the students and saying, what issues are you dealing with? You know, what's going on? Are you being helped? Or what help do you need? Or, you know, so I think that's what the documentary is more about for the students.
Where can we catch you, Joe?
All right, first off, you want to go to my website. That is joewesleyphotography.com. J-O-E-W-E-S-L-E-Y photography.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Joe Wesley, J-O-E-W-E-S-L-E-Y. And definitely on YouTube at Just Joe Thoughts, okay? JustJoeThoughts. All right, Just Joe Thoughts.
That's a wrap.
See you later.
See you next time.
To our listeners, thank you again for joining us in the Cinema Pathway podcast today. I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi, and co-host, Miss Dana De La Campa. Our producer and director is the lovely Juliette Asson, and our associate producer is Victor Hugo Pereira. The executive producer and editor is Freddie R. Rodriguez. This was a presentation by Paradoxical Films, and please visit our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com for more information about today's podcast. And you can also email us if you like at cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com, where you can send all comments, suggestions for all future episodes.
Lights out!